You are listening to NYC Radio Live. My name is David Ellenbogen. We are in the container studio of Pioneer Works. This is our maiden voyage here at Brooklyn Raga Massive's three-month residency. And we are in the presence of one of the most outstanding musicians on his instrument, the great Dr. L. Subramaniam. He is in town to perform with his son, Umbi, as part of the Lakshmi Narayana Global Music Festival. It's the only North American stop on this tour. And he'll be performing this February 5th. That's this Friday, folks, at 8 p.m., the 92nd Street Y. It's a presentation of the World Music Institute and the 92nd Street Y. You don't want to miss it. He'll be performing with his son, Umbi Subramaniam. And in fact, at the end of this interview, the two of them will be doing a little live performance for all of us. So we're very excited. Welcome to NYC Radio Live, Dr. L. Subramaniam.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Great pleasure to be here.
So my first question is, I'm just very curious about your early education. How did you get started on your instrument?
Basically, my father was a very, very great violinist. My mother used to sing and play Veena. But those days, you know, the women didn't perform much outside. Basically, the men performed. My father's whole view was the violin, which was basically an accompanying instrument in Indian tradition. He wanted to make it a solo instrument. And for that, he had to develop a lot of violin technique, which is very specific to our tradition, which doesn't exist in any other system. So he introduced a lot of techniques, left-hand techniques, right-hand techniques, and playing polyrhythms, playing a composition in multi-rhythmic cycles. So all those things, he started working on it when he was in Sri Lanka. Then he taught all of us. So my training was from my father, Professor V. Lakshmi Narayana. He was a professor in Sri Lanka. In between, went to Sri Lanka from India to teach. And he's a visionary. So he wanted to change, so make the violin a mainstream instrument, not just playing for Indian, sabhas and things like that. So he changed that. So basically all my training was from my father. Then also he wanted me to study and have an education, so I went to Madras Medical College, graduated as a medical doctor. The next day I decided, I want to do my master's in composition. So fortunately it was a great support from my parents, because those days, being a doctor, it was a great thing, even now, I think. And then especially when I say I want to go to do my master's in music, all my father's colleagues, they said, you must be stupid to send your son to do music. He will make a ton of money. Let him go and practice medicine there, But my father and mother, both of them, said no problem. Because when I was in my second year of medicine, I played for a German violinist who came to India. So he told my father, he has a great potential. He can become a very, very famous violinist. Why don't you send him to Germany with me to learn music, Western music, so I can play Western music. So my father was very, very happy. I got excited. We went back. My mother said, nothing doing. You say, unless you finish your 5.5 years medical course and 1 year of residency, you don't get your certificate. He said, if you're a dropout in the second year, then you will be a 12th grade educated guy. So he said, nothing doing. You have to finish this and then you do go the next day. So that was a turning point. I decided that day, I'll just finish the course and focus on Western classical music and composition, and to develop my father's technique so that Indian music will become a major, major solo instrument, Indian violin. So they allowed me. I came to U.S. In 1973, came to CalArts, did my master's in composition. And that was the time I met two of the greatest classical North Indian musicians, Ali Akbar Khan and Ravi Shankar. Pandit Ravi Shankar was touring with George Harrison, which I became part of. And Ustad Ali Akbar Khan, probably one of the greatest sarod players, greatest musicians of India, he asked me to do some fusion with him. He had a saxophone player called John Handy. So he had a group called Rainbow. He said, why don't you come and be part of Rainbow? And he also said, why don't you come and teach in Alekpur College? You don't need a certificate and all your MA things is rubbish. You come here. I said, you know, I've come here to get a piece of paper. So I will be here. But then I started. The first North-South Jugalbandi was started by both of us. Before that, North Indian classical music was played by North Indians. South Indian classical was played by South Indians. But sometime I used to have Ustad Alaraka to accompany me along with Mridangam. Like that sometime, you know, Raviji had Mridangam player thing. But as two main artists playing Jugalbandi, first started by Ustad Ali Akbar Khan and me, our first show was in Berkeley, the second was in Lincoln Center, Avery Fisher Hall. Since then, after that, we played a lot. And after that, there are a lot of Jugalbandi started happening. He was kind of a visionary. And strangely, the group he had was Rainbow. I was part of I went to Europe to play with him. Then I had some concerts in the town hall in New York. So in between, I have to leave. So he continued. He went to few places, Czechoslovakia and those places. My name was misspelled, called Subramaniac. So everywhere I went, they asked Ali Akbar Ji, where is Subramaniac? So they all came to. I said, so when he came back, he said, oh my God, wherever I go, they're asking for Subramaniac, and they misspelled your name. So he was laughing. But they misspelled the name. They thought it's some guy, you know, playing some music with Ali Akbar Khan. Then lately, after that, my children took the name, eliminated Subramaniac, as made Subramania. My son Bindu, son Ambi and Bindu, they formed a contemporary classical. He just finished a European tour, very successful tour in Spain and Belgium and other places. So a lot of things started at that time in 70s and 80s. And George Harrison went to do a very big tour with Ravi Shankar. And I was part of it. And Shukumar Sharma and Sultan Khan and Hari Prasad, we were all part of that, the Larakaji. And it was fantastic memories of that period. And we played thrice in Madison Square Garden. Because one of the things I remember was, you know, when George came to stage, at the end we all played together. Everybody lit their cigarette lighter. So you see like 20,000 like lights, you know, on the black, dark auditorium, which I never seen before. That was one of the most memorable things. You walk in, then you start playing, suddenly you see all like, you know, stars, you know, 20,000 things in the dark thing. That was the one of the most memorable thing which happened in New York. The other thing, recently when our Prime Minister came, this was other thing which our Modi came, was first major visit to New York in Madison Square Garden. There were, when me and my wife started performing National Anthem, and my son was also there, 20,000 people sang with us. So it's like having a 20,000 chorus with you, which, you know, you can't imagine how it is. You play something and with your wife sing, then 20,000 people singing with you. So I have great memories of New York. Then also collaborating with Menu Hind was one of the most beautiful thing which we did in the United Nations for 40th year of India's independence. Then with a lot of things in New York. And coming back to World Music Institute, I think this is the first time I'm playing, if I'm not mistaken. But I remember in the 80s, I played once for Robert Browning. But I don't know whether at that time it was formed. Now being the 30 years of celebrations for 2016, it should have been 86. So very, very happy to be part of World Music Series, where I think they have been doing a wonderful job promoting world cultures. I went through and saw quite a few things.
So what were the things that initially brought you to Western music and eventually the West Coast?
Yeah, basically, I came with an idea of learning composition. My introduction to Western music was already happened in India, because my father took me to, those days they used to have some like a film, not a film show, that, you know, somebody used to have a projector and play some music. So he took me to one of those private things where I heard somebody playing the violin. I didn't know who it was. I didn't know what music it was. But I was so enthralled by it that I wanted to learn to compose that kind of music. Later on, I realized it was Joshua Heifetz playing, you know. And what a musician he was, you know, one of the greatest of all times. So I heard him playing the Bach and accompanied sonatas. So that was the trigger. Then I said, somehow I have to learn Western music to compose for major orchestras. So in India, unfortunately, we don't have conservatories or where you can have Western that kind of Western education. So the only place was, you know, coming out of India, go to Europe or here. And I had two offers here, one in Ithaca College and one in CalArts, with full scholarship and everything. When they heard my tape, I sent a tape. I had two offers. So my father said, and somebody said, no, West Coast is better because it is no snow, you won't get sick. And all those days, you know, people will think, you know, you suddenly go to a place where there's a lot of snow, you might get sick. So he said, go to California. So I ended up in California. So that was by the time I came here, I've already done one of the Trinity College, you know, London exams. They have Trinity College exams in India. That's very common. So I did my LTCL diploma, and there was a violinist called Peter, then Wilfred Forbes. They used to play for films because we have a very, very strong film industry in India, I'm sure you all know. One in Bollywood, one in Chennai, one in, you know, Andhra Pradesh, and Tollywood, Bollywood, and all those things. So those musicians who learned Western music, they immediately got almost a safe job in playing for films. So every day they will be playing for some music director. So on the side, they were teaching if they liked to teach. They didn't have to teach because they were making enough money. But they felt like, you know, the Forbes was one of the finest violinists at the time. There was a Madras Symphony which occasionally played some music. And there was a radio station where Handel Manuel used to have half an hour Saturday Western music, that's all. At half an hour, he used to play piano. He used to call me and said, why don't you play violin? We will do something. So we used to just play a little bit together. So its whole thing was a variety of things happened there. So I was exposed to Western music. Then I learned composition. When I came here, I straight away I went to a master's degree. But I was told, you know, it was since I didn't have BA music, it might take longer time to do my master's because I don't have my BA music, because I have to cover all the subjects. I had only a medical degree. But I was so homesick, really homesick. So every day I worked till, you know, almost collapsing, too tired to sleep. I'll be in the library practicing, playing there. They gave me a nice piano in the room because I was teaching as a teaching assistant to Indian music. So I finished everything in 9 months. Then the dean at the time, Nick England, called and told me, you know, we can't give you the certificate in 9 months, so why don't you become a teacher, take up a faculty, part-time faculty position, teacher, 1 year, then collect your certificate, or you go home and come back. But those days, going home and coming back was a very big deal, not like now. My parents said, stay there, finish, collect your certificate and come. So it started like that, but then a lot of things happened. I went on the tour, big tour with, you know, Ravi Shankar, Ali Akbar Khan, George Harrison. Then I had a lot of my own solo tours. I was commissioned to write for New York Philharmonic, for India Festival. They played four nights, my composition, Fantasy on Vedic Chant. So a lot of things happened. So I just went back to India every winter to play. At that time, there was one of the greatest mridangam players, Palakkad Mani Iyer, was alive. So I used to go there every year just to play with him because we had a violin trio. I used to go to play with Palakkad Mani Iyer, come back and do my own solo tours. In 1995, I shifted, but I still travel. Now I do a lot of violin duets with my son, Nambi, and both of us play together. He also plays alone, but we do a lot of things.
In your experience, you've gotten to play with the top musicians in many different genres, from Stefan Grappelli to Ali Akbar Khan. What is there something special in these players that you can put your finger on that really brings them to a level that we all perceive as on a higher plane than most musicians?
I don't want to get into comparing people, but I could say a couple of things. Playing with Alec Pakhan and Ehudu Menuhin and a couple of other people, and Stefan Grappelli, people like, you know, Herbie Hancock, Stanley Clarke, George Duke, Hubert Loss. These are all some of the high points. And playing with Alec Pakhan was, of course, something extraordinary. And where, you know, we just, we wouldn't even decide. We just sit there and start playing. So he will play a phrase that will inspire me. I'll play a phrase. So we go on building up and without even realizing where we are. And after the concert, we'll be totally in a different state of mind because the whole, the sound takes over. You know, you start with playing, but then the sound takes over. So your mind is filled with the sounds and combination of sounds, the melodic phrases and motifs and themes, which keeps running many hours after you finish playing. So it was like that with Alec Pakhan's app.
You're really well known for your incredibly high level of technical achievements in terms of execution and mastery of your instrument. That's, you know, unparalleled as far as this listener knows. Is there an approach to performing and even hearing music on that level that has enabled you to achieve that?
It's basically because of my father's guidance. One of the things he used to say is, you know, even if you play the most difficult thing, it should be simple for people to, it look like it is very simple, should not be strained on things. And the second thing, as you start working on it, then you have to know, you know, the phrases, you have to hear even that fast speed, because many times when you play extremely fast, people might miss some of the, even if it is not 100% intonation, people may not hear it. He used to say, used to be able to hear all those notes sharply, even in that flying speed, and try to make sure that each note, you bring life to each note. Otherwise, it will be a dead note. So it won't move. Even if you play fast, it should move people. And it should be not only perfect in pitch and tune, whatever the technicality is, but music is beyond technique. An artist is beyond a technician. So he used to say, you should bring life to each note, each phrase. And that's what was the lesson I had. That was one of the biggest lessons I had, this thought what he gave me. And my mother was always, you know, be patient and you have a goal, dream, and you just go after it till you get it. So when I was very young, I wanted to be the best violinist, honestly. So that was my goal, that was my dream. And at that time, you know, there were a lot of seniors, people who were much, much older than me, who were well-known and things like that. But then it all slowly started happening. All of a sudden, you know, my father used to say, try to listen to, you know, major orchestras, you know, Joshua Heifetz, Menuhin, Grappelli, all these people, that kind of perfect. You hear it if you can. But slowly, you know, all of a sudden, one day I got a call from Menuhin's secretary saying that Menuhin wanted to talk to me. So I called him back. He said, can you come and play in Bonn for his 70th birthday, 60th birthday? So slowly I started, then we started playing together. We played in the UN for the 40th year of India. Then we recorded videos. And incidentally, next year is going to be 2016, Menuhin's centenary. I'm doing some projects in Europe for him. And hopefully I'll do it here also in US, a tribute composition for him. So slowly, like that, playing with other people also push you. You know, you have to be in your best, and so you can't say that, you know, I'll play whatever I want. But musically, it has to be complementing each other and try to build up some new heights. It was always like that. Playing with other people also opened up my thoughts, and whether it is Ali Akbar or Menuhin or Stefan Grappelli or a few other people I've played, and Herbie Hancock, George Duke was a fantastic keyboard player, and unfortunately passed away a couple of years back, and Stanley Clarke. And so all these things you play, then you think about your own roots, your own music, how you adapt itself so that you bring your color, your emotion, your feeling, and your technique without compromising.
I'm going to hand the microphone over to Sameer Gupta, who's one of the co-founders of Brooklyn Raga Massive.
Thanks, David. Subramaniam ji, I just want to first say thank you so much for being here. And I want to just acknowledge that the comfort level which you drop names like Herbie Hancock and George Duke is so inspiring to a musician like me. And just want to really acknowledge that. And I wanted to ask you, in relation to your father's influence and his approach, I remember you saying that he made a deliberate attempt to kind of take the violin outside of the standard roles and take it out of its standard format. I was wondering if you could tell me a little more about that.
You know, my father in 1930s, he was violin was had a very, very background role those days. And it was more common in South Indian than in North Indian. Later on, people like, you know, Pandit Joe came in the scene. He became very, very well known. I had the great pleasure of touring a lot with him. But still, the Indian music scene, was South Indian music or instrumental music, whatever you call it, it was all, you know, in a smaller circle, not in the main circle. So he thought, you know, first of all, instead of saying it is low and try to go to the mainstream, we have to change. We have to be technically perfect and bring things which doesn't exist in other system. So either playing, you know, we talk about rasa when you play raga. Whatever raga you play, we say there are certain moods, there are certain colors, there are certain emotion you try to bring in, but even though it is just a note. But then you try to bring life to the note by different ways, by ornamentation, by sliding or hitting the note if it is a microtone exactly in that way. So he started focusing on one side on tonal production quality, very, very powerful, clear tone. And then the emotion of the notes, which was very, very individualistically Indian. Then some of the techniques like plucking, like incorporating veena technique into violin technique. So when you play, you can pluck seven. And also we have South Indian music, we have panja nadai, we call it. You subdivide each beat into, you know, whether three pulses, multiplication of three, four, five, seven, and nine. Multiplication of the, we say, tisram, chadusram, kandam, misram, and sangeena nadai. He started working on those things, playing a composition in multiple speeds. In fact, because of him, I've recorded a Varnam in 15 speeds in Panjanadai with Pal Katmani. Still today, nobody has been able to duplicate it. It was all this, try to do in that level. And also playing, incorporating Veena technique, all of a sudden you hear a lot of polyrhythm. Even though if you're playing 4-4, you will have groups of 7 or 9 or... five superimposed, and then we have like Tiha, we have calculated patterns which end on the composition starting point. So he worked on, his idea was to work on different levels. One, on technical level, which is melodic concept and rhythmic concept. Melodic concept to bring the emotion, life, and expression, and also playing the extremely difficult lines, which is practically impossible to play in that speed, still giving life to each note. That was the most difficult thing, to bring emotion to that note. Second thing, rhythmically try to do polyrhythmic structures and bowing and left-hand techniques, which is almost very, very special to Indian music, polyrhythmic structure. So these are the ideas he gave me, and he coached me on that. And that led to whatever, I mean, that's many times I say all the glory, everything, I get it, you know, everything belongs to him because he's not there. I say I keep collecting all this awards and things, which every time I collect an award, I say it is not basically not my award. It belongs to him. He's not there for all the work he has done, all the so far. Seeding and planting and doing everything. I'm collecting the fruits. Basically, that's what it is.
I'm going to hand the mic over to our resident Carnatic violin player, Arun Ramamurthy.
Thank you, and Dr. Subramaniam, it's so wonderful to be here, and your music has been very influential for me over the years. So coming as a Carnatic violinist, how do you feel that your training as accompanying vocalists and playing in very traditional settings has helped cultivate your style as a more of a world musician, collaborating with so many different artists. How do you feel that you look back to your roots or use that in your current playing?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, violin was basically an accompanying instrument. Because it was an accompanying instrument, they didn't have to develop virtuosic playing automatically. Because if you play better than your main artist, your career is over. They will never call you. I mean, this is true, at that time at least. So suddenly you play with the vocalist or vina player, you play violin, you get a clap. Start writing or better or anything, then they will call, that will be the last concert you play with that artist. So there are that kind of, so people were also, you know, want to make a living happily, so they always played a subdued way. And indirectly, it also affected the mainstream, main artists, because main artists doesn't have to, if you have a virtuoso player, they also have to work very hard to stand up to even get the attention. If a companies play better than them, a raga, then people obviously know audience are not fooled. Then the main artists will, so that pressure they didn't have. They know whatever I sing, whatever I play, this guy has to play less. So that pressure also blocked the improvement of that thing. I feel that. Because if there's always a healthy competition, always know for very, very good for any art form, for creativity, to expansion, to go globally. So my whole father's vision was, you know, you have to take the violin to that height whether it cannot be ignored. Indian violin should not be ignored. So these are the various ways. So the challenges at that time, people initially, you know, sometimes people used to say, why do you have to play, a composition in 15 speeds, or you have to play 45 minutes of alap, why do you have to do it? You know, we can comfortably play 10. So then that everybody else was doing. And recording a varnam in 15 speeds or 13 speeds, still people are not able to do it. At that time, Maniyar, Palkat Maniyar, the greatest mridangam player of all times, he told me, you know, when he started his career, he was also a teenager, and when he started playing, people used to say, when Chatusra, you know, in four beats cycle, suddenly if you play a combination of triplets, they used to say, oh, this is not a tradition. They just used to say, because, you know, they were not able to do it. So he said, they used to say, this is not tradition. What is tradition? Because you have heard certain thing and you believe that's all is possible. Beyond that vision, if you go beyond that boundary, other musicians will say, oh, it's not done. So Maniyar said, when I used to play this, people used to say, what is this? It's not tradition. But then I kept on expanding. Then the entire mridangam community started following what I was doing. They were all copying him because they wanted to sound like Maniyar. So he told me, he stopped playing accompaniment. He said, you play solos. Why do you want to play accompaniment? You just play solos. And then, you know, people will hear you, and then you don't have to cut yourself. You expand, and then, you know, you have that potential. And playing with people like Ali Akbar Khan, later on, I've played with practically a lot of Bismillah Khan Sahab, Ali Akbar Khan Sahab, Pandit Jasraj, Pandit Jog, and even with Amjad Ji. I played with all people, every Jugalbandi. So that also, you know, you played as a Jugalbandi is like an equal partner playing duets. So you play what you feel, there's no restriction, no thing. So a lot of things happen that always the tendency is, you know, for some people who have not heard something, anything new might be initially, oh, what is this? But if it is really good, it'll stay. Time will tell.
Well, I think we're all getting really excited to hear some live performance from you and your son. But I had one final question. I would imagine over your entire life, your reasons for playing music may have evolved. Maybe it's been one thing the whole time. But I'm just curious, what is the thing that gets you out of the bed in the morning ready to pick up your instrument?
I always say I'm zero without violin, zero without music. For me, music is everything. It's way of my life, way of my living. At any ups and downs in life, whatever has happened, I have always expressed myself through music. Written composition when I lost my mother, I wrote this piece, Fantasy on Vedic Chant, basically based on Vedas chanting, because, you know, when anybody dies, there's a 13 days of all the spiritual things happen, priests come and sing and chant and all those things. So anything, at any situation, it has been my best companion and friend. So whether you're happy, whether you're sad, whether you lose something, a lot of things. Then later on, I wanted to share that with my children. So I've always insisted all my children should learn music and play music. And now I'm happy because my father's legacy will continue because Ambi is playing violin. He's doing extremely well, playing everywhere. And also my daughter is singing, even though not Indian classical. She has this group with as a contemporary music with the roots in Indian music and jazz and other thing. And I also, once I got involved with Kavita's wedding with me, she's one of the most known Bollywood singers, and Rabindra Sangeet, she sings so beautifully. So we have done a lot of projects together. So it is almost like sitting, instead of you sitting and talking as a family, go for a vacation, music has also been a great, great companion. She sings, I play, I'll teach him, he plays with me. And then my daughter sings, I teach a little bit, and they all play together. We exchange ideas, thoughts. So it is almost like, you know, we have a family holiday with music. So without music, I don't think I will have that kind of completeness in my life.
Well, I think you've taken many people on many journeys.
Thank you. Very kind of you.
Well, if people, listeners, want to hear the real thing in person, Dr. L. Subramaniam is playing in concert with his son, Umbi, February 5th, 2016. That's this Friday, 8 p.m. at the 92nd Street Y, which is a production of the World Music Institute and 92nd Street Y. They've got their instruments here, and we are super excited to hear this live performance from Dr. L. Subramaniam and Umbi Subramaniam.
Is that something that you've sort of